Hey everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamandjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 247, and today we have a special guest, Dan Diaz from the School of Sharks. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. There will be a live session on the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
Dan, it is a pleasure to have you on our podcast today, and I don't know you at all other than from your Facebook group, School of Sharks, but we actually talked about some of your deal structuring a number of episodes ago, and I thought, hey, what better way to, I love to learn, right? Different perspectives are, I hope in this episode or the next one that I'm going to learn some techniques that I'm going to take and incorporate in my own business. And if we can share that with our audience, even better. So thank you very much for coming and joining us today.
Hey, listen, Jeff, I hope it's a two-way transaction that we're doing here, because I hope to learn, you know, as well. And I'm definitely excited. I'm honored to be here. And I'm happy to share what it is that we do. One of the things that I love, and I think you'll agree with me, Jeff, is that real estate is one of those odd industries where there are so many pathways and so many streets and variations and ways to get to where you want to go, that I think that's what really makes the road very, very exciting. I'm excited to be here. A little bit about myself. I began my real estate investing career in November of 2015. At the time, I was general manager for a mobile manufactured home company called Palm Harbor Homes in San Antonio, Texas, Elmendorf, Texas, actually. And, you know, I kind of got the juices flowing. I was making a really great salary, but I was working not 9 to 5, but 5 to 9. Mm-hmm. And it sucked. And with that, I just kind of went down, you know, the rabbit hole that I'm sure a lot in the audience are going through, the reading and investigating and researching. And one of the things that connected with me personally was owner financing. And that's kind of where I made my niche. My first deal was a mobile home on land in Elmendorf, Texas. I love to talk about it because there's no reason that anybody should ever be looking for anything in Elmendorf, Texas, if you know about anything in Elmendorf, Texas. But I found my first deal, you know, and I went ahead. And little did I know that what I was doing was purchasing subject to the existing financing. I was just taking over someone's payments that they couldn't afford anymore. And little did I know that what I was going to do was called owner financing. I simply was presenting a similar opportunity to somebody who could not get a bank mortgage. Interim, I made about $80,000 in upfront profit and about a $400 monthly spread for the next 30 years. And it's I've never looked back, you know, ever since. That's, so I've kind of made my niche in owner financing. What's that?
That's pretty good for your first deal. That's
big. Yeah.
And a mobile.
Yeah. It was great, but I like talking about the negatives about it. And one of the negatives is velocity of money. Because of lack of experience and really not knowing what to do, it took me 9 months, yeah, you know, from beginning to completion. How many other deals could I have done in those 9 months? Well, now I know that much more than $80,000 worth. So velocity of money is definitely something. The other thing is that, and this is a funny story, if I can share, we were with the closing attorney, and I didn't know anything. I really did not know anything. And he asks me, what's the interest rate that you're owner financing at? And I literally have a blank stare. I'm like, I don't know. What do you want it to be? Like, I'm thinking we're just filling out paperwork. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, no, that's not what I put. What did you agree to owner finance at? I'm like, we didn't talk about interest rate. And there was like a dead face. And he says, well, we need to talk about that. Did you agree on a payment? I'm like, oh, yeah. The payment, I got it. my goal was to make $400 more than what I was paying. And he said, oh, okay, all right. So we can do the math backwards. Let's take a look at what the underlying, you know, payment is, and let's go ahead and do the math. And I'm glad you know a payment, and you're both in agreement on payment. Well, because I had bought subject two at about a 3.5%, and I only wanted a $400 monthly spread, it turned out that I was owner financing a mobile home on land at about 5.75%, mm-hmm. which now I know is not something you should ever do. But he did the math and he's like, well, it looks like it's a little under 6%. I'm like, all right, let's go ahead and do it. He says, you're okay with this? I'm like, yeah, why not? What could go wrong? Well, now I know that I'm stuck with that deal. There's no way I'll ever be able to sell that note if I need to. But you know, it is what it is.
It's so interesting. So were there people or how did you were already in real estate per se?
Sort of. Yeah.
But what got you into investing? Was there specific mentors or podcasts or YouTube? I mean, you haven't been doing it that long.
Yeah.
You're still sort of new.
Yeah. No, I consider myself very much a newcomer. I'm still learning, you know, a lot. For me, it was two things. One, when I used to work, so before I got into mobile and manufactured homes, I used to be in the food and beverage industry, waiter, bartender. I was a sommelier. And one of the things that I loved about it was the flexibility of scheduling. Mm-hmm. If I wanted the day off, just get your shift covered. If you wanted more money, you just pick up someone else's shift. So the flexibility was there. Then, of course, you start, you know, adulting, and you start looking for something more stable. And for some reason, more stable means I have a business card and I have an office. So that's when I got involved in mobile manufactured homes. And there I got a taste for a lot of money. I walked away from a six-figure salary that started with a five, you know, and I was doing really well. But I completely lost my flexibility of schedule. I could not get a day off if my life depended on it. So I had both tastes, and I started really just saying there has to be a better solution than this. Now, what really triggered for me personally, and I'm glad you talked about mentor, is I was a Thursday afternoon at a bar, and I was having a drink. I was having a salad, and I met a gentleman, good-looking guy, good-looking lady. And it looks like they were just having a time of their life. Now, I knew I was playing hooky from work, but it didn't seem that they were playing hooky from anything. So me being the natural extrovert that I am, I walk up to them. I'm like, hi, my name is Dan. I don't know what you do for work or for income, but clearly it allows you to be here with a girlfriend, wife, significant other, and having a good time. And he says, yeah, he says, we own our own business. It's in real estate. And he says, started talking, and he says, have you heard of, or do you know what contract assignments are? And I said, no, but if it's letting you do this, I want to know more.
Sure.
And he says, look, don't take this the wrong way. A lot of people approach my wife and I, I've been married for 15 years, and they love what we're doing. And not that we don't like to teach, but most people just don't have it in them. Tell you what, are you familiar with what a bandit sign is? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, got a whole bunch in the office. I work in mobile homes. And he says, do me a favor, go ahead and write 100 bandit signs. I buy homes, put your number on it. And only after you've done that, come back and talk to me. And I said, that's it. And he laughed. And I said, yeah, if you do that, then I know you're serious. I said, all right, got his phone number. Immediately went back to the office. I'm like, guys, we're doing bandit signs, but they have a different message. Well, he didn't know that. I mean, that's how mobile homes are moved, you know, corrugated, yep. You know, bandit signs.
Yep.
So we did 100 bandit signs. I told the guys, new mission. I buy houses. This is my number. Don't ask. Go ahead and put them outside. And they had their routes, you know, so they went ahead and put them on, you know, on telephone poles and corners and what have you. I called him up the next morning. I'm like, hey, Ben, his name was Ben Sanchez. I'm like, hey, Ben, guess what? They're already out. Now what? And he looks at me, and I could tell, he says, you didn't put 100 bandit signs. I'm like, I did. I don't believe you. I'm like, let me go pick you up and I'll show you where they're at. Picked him up and I started giving him a tour. You see that one? That one's mine. You see that one? That one's mine. You see that one? That one's mine. You see those two? Why the hell did they put two in one pole? I don't know, but those two are mine. And he was so impressed, you know, and he says, you know what, let's talk a little bit more. Now, he was gracious enough to share a couple of hours of his time, which I paid for. And I realized that contract assignments, because of its transactional nature, was not necessarily where I wanted to go into. I really wanted to go into rentals or some sort of cash flow business. So he's the one who pointed me in the right direction at that meeting. And he says, look, transactionally, you're making a ton of money, $500,000 or more. I get it. You want cash flow. You want to go either in rentals or notes. Mm-hmm. And I think owner financing really kind of made an impact on me, because at the mobile home dealership, half of our deals really were in-house financing. They really were the buy here, pay here kind of scenario. So I was very familiar with it. And also, coming from an immigrant family, the first home that my parents bought in this country was dueño a dueño. It was owner financing. So it just made a lot of sense to me. And that's where I kind of, you know, stuck and kind of went from there.
Well, it isn't it funny that literally your entire career just started by going to a bar one day randomly? And just
a lot of things in my life have started at a bar.
That's great. I love it. All right. So without going into too much, because I really want to dive in deeper, but sure. Tell us a little bit about what your business is now, and you know, what size do you have? A team? How many people? What do they do? Where do you work? What's your market? That kind of stuff.
Sure. So there's three aspects to the business. One of them is best understood as reverse owner financing, or perhaps a lending approach. We took owner financing and we flipped it upside down. We found that one of the biggest problems with the traditional model of owner financing, which is to buy a house and owner finance it, is that you're spending all this money on marketing and you're bringing these leads in, but your house isn't exactly what they're looking for. Maybe they want something newer. Maybe they want something in a different side of town, something smaller, two stories, whatever. However, the buyers are great. You know, the buyers are great. So what we started doing in 2019, more or less, is we said, look, the problem is not the inventory. There's 10,000 homes for sale on the MLS. The problem really is the financing, the money aspect of things. Mm-hmm. Around the same time, I started learning about the wonderful world of self-directed IRAs and learned that there's about $3 trillion sloshing in the markets looking for somewhere to park that isn't anymore in their growth stage. They simply want predictable, stable return. So we kind of merged the two together. And we built a company, Tomatoro Ventures and Acquisitions, that specifically looks at a buyer first. We make a real world determination of their real world ability to repay. We then source the funds so that they can purchase any home off the MLS. This allows us to do homes from as little as $150,000 all the way up to $1.5 million. Site built, single family, owner occupied homes in San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston. And really all around Texas. So that's one aspect of the business. It's relatively small. It's 12 of us, and all of us work remotely. Two attorneys, an RMLO, a couple of lead gen people, and a couple of agents that kind of work with us. We have another business, which is strictly acquisitions and wholesale. So what we do with that is we use wholesale as a way to just bring leads in. We'll end up closing the ones that we want to hold, and we'll go ahead and dispo the rest. The favorite preferred option of dispoing that works for me, I'm not saying it's the best, and it's definitely not the way most people can start, but I like to close on my properties. Okay. So even if it's, I think they call it wholetailing now, but it's funny how things changed. When I met Ben, what people call wholesale, he just called it contract assignments, which mm-hmm. I think is a better term.
Yeah.
And then when you buy, close, and relist, he called that wholesale. So it's a little bit of a learning adjustment, yeah. But that's our preferred method. And we don't, I've never done a full rehab in my life. I've never done a full rehab. We mow the grass. Yeah, no, we mow the grass, trim the trees, take the dead cats out, and bomb it with Fabuloso. No. Or Pine Sol, you know, if you're white, whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I don't care. You know? And we just relist them.
Yep.
And we do have the ability, if need be, to owner finance them. So we kind of let the market dictate, is this going to be a cash sale? is this going to be owner financed? What is this? Is going to be a bank, you know, sale? We kind of let it dictate. And of course, the third company is sharing with the world what to do, which is School of Sharks. The goal with School of Sharks is simply to be a fair priced mass educator. I have no problem being called the Walmart. I am the anti-guru. We will never charge $50,000 for anything on our platform. It is simple, quality, recorded courses that people can have access to. So that's the nutshell of our businesses right now.
So I'm going to ask you a question. Sure. On the first one where you can find any property, buy it cash, and then owner finance it. That's a Mitch Stevens kind of, are you familiar with Mitch?
Oh, 100%. Mitch is super cool. He lives up the road in Canyon Lake.
Yeah, kind of figured. Cap.
Yeah.
And then second, obviously, to be able to do this, you've got access to a lot of private money. Is that?
We're raising about 1.6, 1.7, 1.8 every 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Which might sound impressive, but if you realize that our average deal is about 410,000, 420,000, it's only about 4 or 5 deals, you know, a month. Yep. Now, Mitch, he did the traditional owner finance model, which is to buy the house first.
Right.
And then find, you know, someone. You're finding
the buyer that wants a
particular. We're starting with the buyer first.
Yes.
We're not a mortgage company, but the way we operate in the final result, like if you go to Wells Fargo, they don't have any houses you know, for you to buy. They just got money. So that's what we got. We got access to money, and we allow you to owner finance any home, which is really cool because, like I said, in the owner finance world, most homes are in the $75,000 to $150,000 range. And that's starting to become impossible. You have to go out of state now to even find those homes. Right. Definitely not in Texas.
And you're having less and less states that actually have that. Right? So
with our model, it's like, hey, you want to buy a $1 million home? I don't care. It's going to take you $200,000 down and you'll do the math on 10% interest, but we'll get you that $1 million home.
So when you're selling them, then that's a perfect segue into you have the capability of selling the note, right? So we had, I don't know if you're familiar with these guys, Nick Legamaro. Nick Legamaro and Eric Sage.
Yeah.
You know, they like their selling the first, keeping the second. Mm-hmm. And is that something similar to what you're doing?
Yeah. Or? So we don't. We keep the note long term. And this is the reason why all of those super great, you know, gentlemen, they do it the traditional way, which is to buy the house at 60, 70 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Then you go ahead and sell it at 100 cents on the dollar, full fair market value. So there's an equity spread that you either want to recycle your capital or you want to, you know, profit from. We're buying off the MLS.
Yeah.
So there is no equity. Our income, our profit comes from borrowing at 6.5% and owner financing at 9.5%. So it would make no sense for us to sell the note. We're going to hold it long term. Also, when we raise our capital, we're raising it with the full intention of this being part of their retirement plan that will be in place for the next 30 years.
So you're getting long term or lenders coming in that are good with leaving.
100%.
Great. Yeah. Sorry, Cody.
No, I just have a quick question. So sure. I've been doing this since 2020, so this is a newer strategy to me. And I'm curious, so from the seller's perspective, it's just like a cash offer for them, correct? Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
From the seller's perspective, we close at a title company. It's a 28-day close. It's exactly the same like a conventional purchase would look like. We don't ask them to hold the note. We don't ask them to originate the note. They don't do anything different, you know, from their side. Now, that's an interesting question, and I'm glad you brought it up, because we have had sellers that they kind of see what's going on and they want to be a part of it. They're like, oh, this is interesting. How can we be a part of it? Mm-hmm. And we have partnered with sellers, although we don't promote it, and this isn't our intention. It just happened this way. That maybe the house has a purchase price of $400,000 and their underlying balance is only $200,000. And maybe they only need $100,000 in cash. So we'll cash them out $300,000 and we'll let them create a second note for the other $100,000. So we've let them do that. We don't need them to do that.
Right.
But they've kind of seen what's happening in the mechanics and they're like, oh, wow, you know, 9% interest. Yeah, I don't get that on my 401k. How can I tap into that? It's like, well, let me show you how. And we do like it because, I mean, it does lower our own LTV. So sure. It does give us a little bit of a better position.
Right.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So for the buyers, are you guys locking them in to where they can't refinance for a certain amount of time?
Absolutely not. Yeah. So we follow Dodd-Frank, SAFE Act, and the Texas Property Code. 30-year mortgages, no balloons, no prepayment penalties, no lock-in period, no mortgage insurance. And it's a real purchase. The deed is in their name. It's not a lease option or a contract for deed or some other weird, convoluted, hard to understand, you know, arrangement. And to kind of maybe address your question, Nicole, most of our buyers really do see us as kind of a bridge product to lock down the house until they can refinance. We're averaging right now across our entire portfolio about a three-year and one-month holding period on our notes. So about a three-year refinance rate. We're not pushing them. There's no balloons. But, you know, 10% interest rate on a $500,000 home, sometimes you want to get out of that.
Yeah.
Although right now, I mean, you might not be
you're probably going to see people go a little longer now.
Right? Yeah, we might. And we're okay with it. You know, we're set up with the system. But yeah, there's no balloons. There's no prepayment penalties.
What are you, your typical buyer obviously has some issues of going to the bank, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're self-employed. Maybe they just went through health issues or job loss or divorce. What do these buyers look like in terms of, you know, why do they need your help?
Great question. So this is our buyer profile. 85% of our buyers, like you mentioned, are self-employed folks that don't have the 2 years of tax returns or they lie to Uncle Sam. You know, they underreport. They have great credit scores. I believe we're averaging 705, 710 on the credit score across our entire portfolio. Yep. So it's not a credit problem. It's the 2 year tax return or an underreporting problem. I would say about 80% of our self-employed folks, it's an underreporting problem. And what ends up happening, this is their thought process. Option number one, I could either pay Uncle Sam a bunch of money for 2 years to qualify bank loans,
right,
or I put it into my house as a down payment.
Yep.
So it's not a matter of me saving them any money. It's just a matter of where their money is going to go. They're going to have to pay something. And it just makes sense for them to put it into their home. Second thing is, what is the biggest thing that most self-employed folks need at the end of the year? Tax write-offs.
Yeah.
Well, we give them 10% worth of tax write-offs.
Right. You
know? Right. They get a 1098 at the end of the year.
Yep.
So it's kind of, it's a win-win situation, you know, from that perspective. And of course, they ever want to refinance, you know, they're more than welcome to. So 85% of our clients are self-employed. About 60%. Maybe 55-60% are folks that don't have a social security number in this country yet. They only have an ITIN number, but still have great credit scores. About 10% of our
clients, they're probably going to be longer term.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Although, I don't have the advantage of like 30-year record to tell you what's going to happen.
Yeah, sure,
we've been doing this relatively short amount of time, so we're seeing the data. The surprising little tidbit, about maybe 5% of our clients are high net worth borderline celebrity folks.
Oh, wow.
That the reason they're coming to us is because of the privacy aspect of things. If they want us to put the house in a trust, we'll put the house in a trust. If they want us to put the house in their dog's name, we'll put the house in their dog's name. Mm-hmm. And what I've kind of found out is the privacy aspect of things seems to be a big selling point. I look at the ladies they're with and I'm like, I don't think that's your wife.
Right.
I'm just going to say that, you know, just like that. Yeah. It's like, okay.
That's really interesting.
we all have needs, we all have wants. So in a weird way, there is a small segment of the population that we are satisfying, you know, those needs.
So when you're, so now we've kind of talked about what you do for just anyone that, wants owner finance. I want to talk a little bit more about where you're generating leads, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're generating leads, whether you're keeping the property in-house or you're wholesaling it, are you offering terms on those deals? And is that the goal?
Yeah, that's a good question. The answer is yes. We present ourselves from the perspective of you have a house that for some reason you're not able to move. We have solutions. What those solutions are just kind of depends on what your real needs are and what you're looking for. The initial script, you know, that my acquisition guys and girls use is, listen, I don't know what you're going to need. If you're in a cash liquidity situation and you absolutely need us to buy now quickly for cash, we can do that. But full disclosure, it's going to be half price. And I don't want to kick you in the nuts or anything, but you and I are no different before you, you know, hang up on me. The only reason you would stop everything that you're doing today and run to Walmart or Target or Home Depot or Lowe's to buy something that you don't need is if it's half off.
Right.
So, you know, let's get off our high horse. It is what it is. Now, if you don't have a cash liquidity situation, have you thought about the possibility of converting your vacant unused house into a cash flowing asset for the next 10, 15, 20, or 30 years? You can do that with a term sale. And usually the conversation starts there. We educate them. We let them know what their different options are. What we find, Jeff, is that many times, and they've even told us this, they come back to us because of the amount of education that we gave them in the beginning in regards to their options, even though we weren't the best price, you know, lowest or highest price, you know, for them. We treat them very respectfully. We let them know there's a lot of choices. One of the plans of action that I like doing if the house needs a lot of repairs is I'll ask them, hey, listen, well, your house needs a lot of repairs. I'm sure it wasn't always the case. Do you need money to fix it up? Do you need money to fix it up and sell it? Do you need money to fix it up and rent it? And if the answer is yes, again, we kind of gauge them a little bit. Do they have the ability? Do they, you know, can it work? And what we'll do is we'll buy it, but for the repair estimate. And then we'll turn around and owner finance it right back to them at a markup.
Hmm.
So we found our seller at a really low price.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not really buying the house. We're really just providing the funds that they need to repair it. And then we turn around and owner finance it. So we found the buyer.
Right.
In one same transaction.
That's really
And that's a pretty cool, you know, situation that we do with a lot of leads that yeah. are a vacant abandoned situation. But we buy a lot that's just, you know, they're just good quality rental homes. Our biggest sources of leads is real estate agents. There's 190,000 active licenses in Texas, and they all hear from us at least once every 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So we aggressively build relationships with real estate agents. I know that's not, you know, the norm. I know there's a love-hate relationship between investors and agents, and you know, it's
accurate.
They
can provide you what you need. you know, that they're doing their job and it's mm-hmm. fulfilling your needs. They're certainly not going to be upset with you when mm-hmm. you know, they get paid their commission, right? So
agents have access to off-market leads
yeah.
that they're pretty ready to sell if the opportunity works well.
Yep.
And that I think is a great, great, you know, untapped tool. So a lot of our leads come from real estate agents because of the networks that we've built with them.
Do you do any commercial type deals or is it all residential?
So we do own a couple of mobile home parks that would fall under commercial. We also own a couple of small strip malls, like 4 or 5, you know, older model. It's not my forte, though. You know, it's not my wheelhouse. It's not something I feel super comfortable necessarily sharing because it's more like I've looked at the deal. They're slam dunks. they kind of fell on my lap and I'd be silly not to do them.
Yeah.
Not aggressively. Got a couple of apartment complexes, but like one of them is a 12 unit, another one is 16, you know, and we got a couple of fours out there as well. So,
Well, I think what we'll do is so now we got a little better idea of who you are, mm-hmm. what you do. And the next episode, and I don't remember the exact example, and I went back through the Facebook group yesterday.
Oh no,
I couldn't find it. I'm pretty sure that I can jog your memory in terms of the three offers that you sure. threw out, and I want to talk about those in particular yeah. about how you use creative financing mm-hmm. and in a much different way, certainly a much different way than I ever have. And and I think Cody and I had a pretty good conversation about, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So
what was it? Because I do all sorts of odd, weird, non-conventional, unorthodox approaches.
So I'll just tell you that we'll set it up right now and then we'll cut this episode off. But the poster was talking about a commercial property he wanted to buy, and he came up with an example offer, and you chimed in and said, I would make these three offers. And one was cash if they wanted to close in 30 days. One was something else if they would close in 90 days. And I think the cash was bank financing, or the 90 days was bank financing, 30 days was cash. And then there was first of all of them had no money down, right? One was like
a seller has to fight for that. Well, and they got to give something in return.
Yeah, you offered 8% interest as a discounted price, but 8%, and they were going to make like $2 million or something. And so I just want to get a better idea of how you're looking at structuring some of these. And I know that you talk about that you do a lot of no money down deals and a lot of like interest, no interest kind of deals. So I want to talk about that. That's what everyone wants to know, right?
Sure.
We're going to dive deeper into how you're looking at deals and what you like to do to try to structure them. All right. So, Nicole, do you have any final thoughts, anything, or should we just put an end to this and start right up again?
Let's do part two.
All right. Well, hopefully you enjoyed that. I did. But you're really going to love this next episode with Dan Diaz. So stay tuned. Go out and create some terms.